Good evening. This is Dr. Rosario Griffin interviewing Dr. Maeve O'Sullivan, who's a lecturer in Human Resource Management at Cork University Business School, UCC. Tonight we're going to talk about low-paid workers, the pension age, part-time and precarious work in Ireland, as well as carers and the gig economy. Good evening, Maeve. You're very welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rosario. Lovely to speak to you.
Lovely to speak with you as well. Now, as I mentioned, we were going to speak about the low-paid work, older workers, the pension age, part-time precarious work in Ireland, and recognising the work of carers and, I suppose, the gig economy. So there's quite a lot there. But before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in this area.
Sure. I was born and bred in Carrick and Shannon, County Leitrim, now living in Nina, County Tip. I suppose I lived abroad for 10 years, and when I returned to Ireland with my husband, I worked part-time whilst raising our three children, which was a privilege. But I noticed when I was working part-time, Rosario, that a lot of the work was restricted to a few of the economic sectors, you know, such as catering, retail, care work, and mainly in lower occupations.
Right.
I then went on to work as a trainer and facilitator, working mostly in the NGO sector, and then returned to study a master's in work and organisational behaviour at the University of Limerick, where I was lucky enough to get a scholarship to pursue a PhD, which I did, looking at the role and the experiences of part-time, precarious and older workers. So I joined Cork University Business School last year, where I lecture in areas relating to managing people in organisations.
Okay, very interesting background. And I'm sure that background brings a lot to your understanding of your own topic area or area of research.
Yes, I think it probably does, Rosario. I also, in those periods of time, I ran my own business. I was unemployed. I was a working mother. So I suppose those experiences do enrich your hopefully the contribution that you can make.
Right. And tell us about your concerns for, we say, low-paid workers, carers, etc.
Sure.
What can be done about it? Or indeed, they're predominantly occupied by females in the first instance. Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct, Rosario. It certainly is. I wrote a piece recently for RTE Brainstorm, just looking at low-paid workers in light of the COVID crisis. And it certainly, to me, came to light when I looked around and saw that the essential workers, many of whom were low-paid, were along with the wonderful medical staff and the caring staff, were essentially keeping us going during the crisis. So when we look at it, low-pay would be defined as being earnings below two-thirds of the median income. So that translates to, if you're earning less than €489 per week in Ireland, you're considered low-paid.
Right.
Now, what's interesting in Ireland is that we have the third highest incidence of low-pay in the EU. Almost a quarter of our workers are low-paid. But having said that, just before the COVID crisis broke, we had the fastest-growing economy in the EU with almost full employment. So those two contrasts, I think, are pretty stark. So I suppose just looking at who's working and what they're doing, as I said before, many of those essential workers that kept us going and are keeping us going are very low paid. They didn't have the possibility of not working, or the privilege that some of us in the public sector have as to be able to work from home. You cannot stack a supermarket shelf working from home.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, low-paid work also means that the terms and conditions of employment are not great for these employees. So they have a double hit.
Yes.
As well as that, if you're low-paid in the short term, Rosario, chances are that your pension contributions will be significantly lower, and you're unlikely to receive the full old age pension when the time comes. So it's a double whammy. You get hit in your low pay, and then in the long term, in terms of your pension contributions.
And how could this be redressed to create a more equitable society, Maeve?
Yeah. So when we look at the figures, Rosario, we tend to have a high incidence of low pay and then a number of high paid workers in Ireland. So we seem to have quite an unequal distribution. And if we look at the low paid sectors, the sectors in which the low paid workers are employed, mostly in the catering, retail and care work. And as you rightly said, these sectors are dominated by women and younger workers. Mm-hmm. So I just looked at the figures before I came to speak to you. And at the end of May, 1.8 million people in Ireland were dependent on the state for their income, okay, compared with 1.2 million people at work. So a significant number of those who were working were low paid. So you can see that we have a few problems in terms of, yes, our low paid workers and the economy. But we really need to incentivize employers to generate decent jobs, and they are under a lot of pressure at the moment.
Yes,
because the small employer has been severely hit during COVID, so there are some government incentives out there. But so not just work, but decent work. We have quite a number of people working in the gig economy as well, and those are
actually. Can you explain the term the gig economy, because it's thrown around a lot, but I'm not really clear as to what it means.
Sure, and that's a really good point, because actually there isn't a general accepted definition of the gig economy, but it typically is a labour market which is characterised by short-term contracts or freelance work, okay, as opposed to permanent jobs. So okay, as such, you're a self-employed contractor working for the likes of Deliveroo, Just Eat, Uber Eats, and you don't have any of the benefits of being a full-time worker, such as sick pay, such as redundancy payments, etc.
Okay. And is that how much of the economy would be participating in the gig economy approximately?
Yeah, so it's actually difficult to assess that, Rosari, because as you can imagine, much of that work is done in the black economy. It
okay,
tends to be a cash business. But mm-hmm, a couple of years ago, a colleague of mine, a few colleagues, James Duggan and a few colleagues in my own department, estimated that about 200,000 Irish workers were working in the gig economy. And in general, somebody working in the gig economy earns about one-fifth less than their permanent counterpart for doing exactly the same work.
Okay. Exactly the same work.
Yeah.
That's
exactly
interesting.
The same work.
So it could,
yeah,
be professional work as well as, we'll say, very skilled work or non-skilled,
yeah,
work as the case may be. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, because some years back we would have associated the gig economy with, you know, very low paid work and low skilled work.
Yes.
However, we now see, if you look at the banking crisis that we had, many companies outsourced a lot of their functions. So in many cases, for example, the catering function in organizations is often outsourced, and other functions. So you can have gig economy workers working at high level, medium level and lower level.
Okay, interesting. So it really cuts across all sectors.
It does, but when we talk about it, we generally refer to the low-paid economy.
Okay, but these are precarious workers anyway, in precarious work situations, such as researchers even at university going from contract to contract, perhaps. Maybe that's a less...
Yes, absolutely. And that's actually, there's a lot of academic interest, as you'll know yourself, Rosari, in precarious employment for researchers and teaching staff in universities. It's quite an issue at the moment.
Right. And so you've generated this concern or research interest in the gig economy and low paid workers and carers, etc. What,
yes,
are the key points, we say policy points, that could be addressed to sort of, as I said, bring about a more equitable society? Or is,
yeah,
that even possible, do you think?
Yeah, it is possible. Some sociologists have been looking at, and indeed economists have been looking at, what we can do to try and make our societies a little more equitable. There's an interesting proposition out there. People may have heard about the universal basic income,
yes,
which is an income that every, well, it there have been some pilot studies, and some parts of the world have given an income over to people over the age of 18, a basic income, maybe 10,000, 12,000 per annum, which is given directly to people before they work. They can then top up this income by working if they choose. But the interesting thing is there is no social welfare and everything is paid for.
Okay.
So that's been met with very mixed results, and in some countries have actually stopped the pilot project. But arising from that, there has been a bit more work, and there's a couple of really interesting propositions. One is the participation income, and that would be combined with what they call universal basic services. So services would be it would be a case of nationalising some of our services,
right,
and the participation income would be paid to people who make a meaningful contribution to society. So examples would include participating in education, caregiving, 80% of which is not paid at the moment in Ireland,
right,
forms of voluntary work, political participation, and so those kind of essential services that are done by NGOs and volunteers to contribute to society. So looking at society rather than an economy. So there have been a few other options out there. One is to pay people a living wage,
right,
rather than a basic wage. And that's been set at, I think it's around €12.30 in Ireland at present. So many of the unions are advocating a living wage. So that's another way of looking at it. So there are a few options.
Mm. Doesn't this risk inflation, just playing devil's advocate here, that if you were to, we say, raise, it's a bit like everything, you know, costs almost go up to meet, not demand, but the amount of money floating around in the economy.
So there are a few other options.
Inflation.
For example, giving more assistance with childcare. So here in Ireland, our current spending on childcare, funding for childcare, is about 0.2% of our national income.
Right.
The UNICEF goal is
1%.
Okay. The other area, of course, we need to look at is housing. The rental market, you know, the average rent, I looked at a daft.ie report there recently, so our average weekly rent nationally is €350, ranging from about 150 in my beloved Leitrim to about 550 in South County Dublin. So there's a massive disparity there in terms of rent.
Yes.
So you're right. So how do we pay for all of this? Well, at the moment, we know that on the money markets, we can borrow money very cheaply at the moment. There are also some very good EU schemes out there at the moment, such as the SURE EU scheme to get people after the gig economy, after the COVID crisis, to get them back to work. So there are a lot of funding options. Of course, we can look at increasing our corporation tax, our changes in income tax. So there are lots of options, and I really think that this crisis has given us an opportunity to rethink the way we look at our society and look at our economy and value some of our workers who are, you know, precarious.
Yes.
And not being valued at the moment.
Yes, indeed. And reverting to your corporation tax, I'd say rather than increasing the corporation tax, closing off certain loopholes that reduce the real amount that is sought from corporations and corporation tax.
Yeah. I mean, if we look to the future, Rosari, I mean, we can see a rise in the gig economy.
Mm-hmm.
We can see the future of work, technology having a massive impact on the way we work.
Yes.
And it's estimated that between 40 and 50% of jobs globally are at risk to automation.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not all doom and gloom, because there will be new jobs created. So workers and people will need to continually upskill. We're also looking at our changing demographics, which is another area I'm very interested in. Mm-hmm. We have an aging population and therefore aging workforce. Currently, our pension age is being discussed during the government formation tasks, mm-hmm. and it's likely that our pension age will increase to 67 and then to 68 in 2028. Mm-hmm. So we're asking people to work for longer. Mm-hmm. So we really need to provide decent work for people in a wider range of options. Our part-time jobs are just in a few sectors, as I've said, and tend to be in lower occupations. Mm-hmm. So we need the Nordic countries provide part-time work in across all sectors and occupations. There are very few reasons why we cannot do that here in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. I suppose finally, I mean, should there even be a pension age? I mean, that's a hugely controversial thing. Whether or not is that just a concept? Would it not be better if there were no retirement age rather?
Yeah, so how it works in companies now, companies are not entitled to fire people on the basis of an age. That's a discriminatory practice that's been outlawed. Mm-hmm. However, if it's in your contract of employment that you will retire at a certain age, that can be justified. As you probably know, Rosarie, in the public sector, it's now possible to work until the age of 70. Mm-hmm. That's been looked at in the private sector, and I would advocate that those who wish to work for longer should have the opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a problem in terms of paying for our aging workforce and aging population. So, the costs are increasing, so we do need to look at how we would fund that.
Yes, that was definitely a hot topic that will need to be addressed.
Maeve,
you have such a wide span of knowledge, and I've learned so much in such a short space of time. I'm delighted and impressed, and I'm so happy that I'm clearer about things like the gig economy and all of that. And you've raised more questions than we've answered, but that's great, which means that we'll have more to discuss another day, hopefully.
That would be great. It'd be my pleasure.
And I'd like to thank you so much for coming on air and for giving your time and expertise. And we wish you all the best as your career continues and progresses in the most interesting fashion as it has begun.
Thank you, Rosarie, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And there you are listening to Dr. Maeve O'Sullivan speaking with myself, Dr. Rosarie Griffin. And if you wish to listen back in any of these interviews, you can go to podcasts on CRY 104FM.com.